No, you tell it.
No, you.
I'm not telling it.
You should totally tell it.
Well, you should tell it.
No, you tell it.
Hello, and welcome to Know You Tell It, a hybrid story incubator slash performance series. Each Know You Tell It participant develops their own nonfiction piece on the page, then switches with a partner to perform each other's work on stage. Because nothing informs your story like hearing someone else perform your story.
Beginning our no vacancy evening, a semester abroad is nearly ruined by one aggressive, sloppy, dim-witted, and perpetually horny housemate in Laura Forer's story of her time in Spain. Here's Bard Hovinga reading No Comprendo.
I stood in the hallway outside the door, holding my key. I already knew what awaited me on the other side. It was why I had dawdled after getting off the subway at the Plaza del Cusco stop on the north side of Madrid, wandering slowly past the restaurants and bars and shops back to the apartment. But I couldn't wander forever. I put the key in the lock and immediately heard the four little feet running to the door. How did he know it was me? Was it his super doggy sense of smell? I turned the key slowly, positioning myself with one foot ready to keep him at bay so I could at least enter. I cracked the door open and stuck my foot through, the barks immediately intensifying, the yips quickening, the jumps getting higher, until finally, as I entered, he pounced, leaping up to my chest, upsetting my balance as I grabbed for the door frame and preventing my entry even far enough to close the door behind me. And so I continued our ritual, pleading practically rietorically at this point. No! Vaya perro! Déjame! As I knew it was futile. Then trying to shake him off my leg, kicking a little harder, then harder still, until finally he flew across the entryway, past the side table, past the lined-up shoes, and thudded against the opposite wall, like a Real Madrid player's ball hitting the goalpost, giving me a couple seconds to move slightly further into the apartment before starting the attack again. The kick, the dense thud, a couple more steps toward my room, and again. This was daily life when I studied abroad, learning Spanish, making new amigos, and thwacking my host's dog across the apartment in an effort to get to my room and close the door for some peace. It wasn't how I had pictured my experience abroad, and it wasn't how I had pictured myself. I love animals. I was vegetarian through most of middle school and high school. Growing up, we had cats and birds and hamsters and fish, and I had learned young that all living things have feelings. During the peak of my vegetarianism, my biology class was conducting experiments with brine shrimp, the same creatures sold as the ever-disappointing sea monkeys. I refused to participate, much to the annoyance of my teacher. My reasoning was that while all living things may not understand what's happening, they can all sense broader feelings, including fear. And I didn't want to cause fear in these tiny, practically brainless beings. And yet, every day, I kick this drooling, panting, masturbating dog so hard that he thudded into walls, skidded across floors, and occasionally yipped in surprise. But he never gave up. His name was Jasper, J-A-S-P-E-R, pronounced Jasper, due to my host Bianca's German roots. I don't even know what kind of dog he was. He was on the smaller side, maybe 20 or 25 pounds. For those of you who aren't dog people, picture something bigger than a New York City rat, but smaller than an R-O-U-S, the rodents of unusual size from The Princess Bride. He was sort of a dirty blonde color, pretty shaggy, stumpy legs, drooly, a short tail that wagged when he barked or humped things. Definitely gross. His matted hair always had wet patches, and I never knew what fluid caused them. As often happens when one's children and spouse are no longer around, one needs someone to take care of, and Jasper was that solution. Jasper loved Bianca, and Bianca loved Jasper. Our other housemate was Monica, another student visiting from America, and she and I became fast friends. When Monica entered the apartment, Jasper gave a friendly little hello bark and then went about his business. When Bianca came home, the woman who fed and raised him, he gave the same friendly bark, wagged his scruffy tail, and that was it. When I asked Bianca if Jasper had been so attached to any other of her previous student guests, she told me he had not. So the mystery remained. Bianca seemed to find the whole situation rather funny, even though simply walking to the bathroom required me to strategically plan when Jasper would be sleeping so I could slip by unnoticed. And yet it turned out that even the bathroom wasn't completely Jasper-free. After I once mentioned to Bianca that Jasper looked so clean, his hair was less matted than usual, and he didn't smell as ripe, she told me that she bathed him in the shower I shared with Monica. Not in her own private shower. I never felt fully clean after that, and I certainly never took a bath. Just off the kitchen, the apartment had a small concrete balcony that overlooked nothing memorable, on which we would dry the laundry but never lounge. As I looked out the window one day at my laundry hanging on racks, I noticed that beneath my clean clothes were two small turds, and suddenly the pollution of the city seemed practically clean compared to the fumes rising from those brown chunks embedding themselves into the fabric of my clothes. And in the kitchen, I remember Bianca's savory food. She was an excellent cook. Her pisto, a Spanish ratatouille, was my favorite. And I still crave her croquetas, the fried coating giving way to a creamy, salty interior. Yes, I have good memories of her home as well. But somehow, each thought of a bite of her crepes, filled with velvety tuna goodness, comes with the memory of Jasper, always there, staring, drooling, scrounging, begging for whatever I was enjoying. One day, I opened the door to my bedroom to find Jasper right in front of my room in the hallway with his stuffed animal. It was the same size as him, and he would drag it around the house in his jagged little teeth. It was missing patches of hair, and it was constantly wet in spots. That day, he was humping it. He looked up at me and looked into my eyes as the humping got more intense. And somehow he had positioned himself so I couldn't get around him. Left and right were blocked. I tried to step over him, but he jumped up, nipping at my heels, without ceasing the humping, which was especially creepy. I closed the door and waited a minute, but I didn't hear him leave. I opened the door again to the same scene. I could hear Bianca watching TV in the living room. Ayúdame, I called. Jasper está humping su animal y no puedo salir mi cuarto. I heard Bianca laugh. She called his name, but of course, he continued to look me in the eye, his shallow pants getting quicker as his small tongue hung out of his mouth. Thrust, thrust, thrust. Drool, yip, thrust. Outside of the apartment, things were less canine-focused. I attended Spanish university, made international friends, drank Spanish drinks, and discovered more delicious food than I ever thought possible. However, despite embedding myself in the culture, in my 4 months in Spain, I never became close to becoming fluent. The most telling demonstration was that my accent was so bad that people did not understand my name. My name in English, Laura, is not uncommon in Spain. But of course, it is pronounced like it actually looks, Laura. Yet, this was a frequent conversation. Other person, me llamo Ana, y tú? Me, me llamo Laura. Other person, Barbara? Me, slowly, Laura. Other person, extending hand to shake, hola Barbara, encantada. Me, no, es Laura. L-A-U-R-A. Laura. Other person, very confused. Laura? ¿Quién es Laura? And so maybe it was my accent that made Jasper ignore my pleas to just let me be. Or maybe the lack of confidence I had in my words manifested in my voice when I asked Bianca for help in getting from the entryway to my room or from my room to the kitchen without being yipped and nipped at. Monica and I would sometimes walk Jasper around the neighborhood. When Monica held his leash, the walk would be fairly normal, requiring only the occasional tug away from traffic. When I held his leash, Jasper would pull so hard that it would take me two hands to strain to yank him back to safety, And then I would end up dragging him down the sidewalk because he was fighting so hard to do what appeared to be committing suicide. There were times when I wasn't even dragging him on all fours. He would have rolled onto his side, but was still pulling against me with all his strength. So now it looked like I was choking a dog turtle creature who wanted nothing more than to run into traffic. And oh, how I wanted to let him. I don't understand, I would complain to Monica. Or, if we were practicing the reason we had come to Spain, no entiendo. Why does Jasper only jump on me? Why does he only follow me around the house? Why does he only pull on the leash when I walk him? Why does he only hump things in front of my room? Monica and Bianca agreed that Jasper just really liked me. It was a crush. Puppy love. But that wasn't how it felt. It felt more like a stalker, a bully. And yet, Bianca laughed at the time. Even as I tell this story today, it should be funny to me. How did this dog, and one of the stupidest dogs in the world at that, come to define my study abroad experience? As I struggled to make myself understood, maybe I just wasn't hearing Jasper. Here he was, professing his puppy love in barks and yips and nips and humps, and I didn't want to hear it. No matter how high he jumped on me, or how quickly he ran around my ankles, or how long he humped his animal in the hallway outside my door, and he could last a surprisingly long time, I pushed him away. Maybe he just wanted to be understood. Or maybe he was just a psychotic, idiotic, randy bastard and no one believed me. In the end, of course, it was Jasper's house and I was the one who left. 4.5 months after my arrival, my studies ended. I packed up my room, leaving it for the next student. I didn't give Jasper the customary pat or scratch behind the ears when leaving. Instead, we played out our usual routine. He jumped on me, I kicked him, he thudded against the wall. My conscience clenched and then released as he came out unscathed and charged back at me. But this time, I closed the door for the last time, ready for new adventures with my large backpack and Europass train ticket, where I may or may not be understood, but at least I could bet there would be fewer horny dogs.
Now, switching it up, Bard Hovinga's inaction results in a less than ideal roommate setup, one made even more complicated by a he said, she said encounter. Here's Laura Forer reading Bard's story, Rachel and Seth.
I turn in the application last minute, so instead of moving into a regular dorm, like Rachel and the rest of the freshmen, they put me in McLowan Hall, what's supposed to be sophomores only, set back on the far side of campus. Like new cellmates, my roommates and I are marooned together, the only freshmen on the second floor, crammed into a common area turned four-person studio. Tom and Ryan are in-state Nebraskans, close enough to leave for family dinners, visits with high school friends, so mostly it's just me and Seth, a Chicago kid with that strange mix of urban attitude and the sensitivity to prove it. We go to the gym, play racquetball, video games, both of which he kicks my ass in. When we get restless, we walk to Bucky's gas station off of Dodge Street, and he buys us six-packs and pints of vodka with his fake ID. Rachel lives in Kiewit, a traditional freshman hall, 7 stories of lofted beds and stained futons. On the weekends, Seth and I stumble down the red brick mall through the middle of campus to hang out in her room, get a taste of it, what it's like to live as real freshmen. Rachel and I go back to junior high, back in Colorado, where she dated my best friend, Nick, all the way through senior year, until it blew up and he spun off into drugs and worse, started losing touch. We had this stupid plan to go to California, the three of us, start a band, live on the beach. With that out of the picture, I was headed the opposite direction, East Coast, maybe Boston, some big city I didn't know, where I wouldn't know anybody, until Rachel convinced me to flee with her instead to higher education and the great Midwest. Come on, she said, the night before all the forms were due. It'll be an adventure. New people, new place, new friends, a fresh start. A fresh start. What I wanted to find out east, but maybe I'd find it in Nebraska just as easy, closer to home, where I would still know someone, have some connection. So, I said yes. Girls are always swooning over Seth, at the gym in his tank tops, around campus with his curly hair and Birkenstocks. So it's no surprise when I start to see the signs with Rachel too, laughing longer at his jokes, meeting us for lunch and dinner in the dining hall, texting on Friday nights to see what we're up to. I feel guilty about Nick, but I tell myself that's over now. High school, in the past. And besides, I'm swooning too, over JC, Rachel's brown-eyed Minnesotan roommate, so it all seems perfect. Rachel, a fresh start. Seth and Rachel, me and JC, until it's not. It's late one night in autumn. Cuit as usual, Rachel's room as usual, me trying, failing with JC as usual. She gets bored, wanders off giggling down the hall. Seth pulls me aside in the doorway and tells me I should probably go too. His eyes are glazed, but his voice is what unnerves me, complete calm, the same condescending tone he uses answering questions in the lecture halls. I try to push past him back into the room, but Rachel stops me. "It's okay," she slurs, eyes half closed. "Go. Go find JC." I try to protest. I don't want to leave her alone with Seth, not with them both like this, not with that look in his eye, sound in his voice, not with Nick back in Colorado, even if we haven't spoken since I left. She brushes me off with a lopsided smile. "It's okay," she says, "seriously, go." So, I go. Something's happened. I don't know what, but it has. Something's different. Rachel stops texting, stops laughing at Seth's jokes because she's not around to, passes us by in the dining hall with just a smile and a hello. I try to ask him about it, and he shrugs me off. Try to ask her about it, but she won't say anything either. Just makes small talk and says she has to go, she's really busy, let's hang out soon. But we never do. I don't know what else to do, so I just keep hanging out with Seth. Keep playing racquetball and video games, keep walking to Bucky's for beer and vodka. We stop going to Cuit. JC corners me one night at a party, her and me alone, everything I've ever wanted, until I hear her yelling over the music that I need to talk to Rachel. I try to ask her more, but she just slurs something about Seth, stumbles away into the noise and darkness. I finally catch her outside of Cuit at dusk, the campus fading cool blue and hazy orange, reminding me of high school nights back in Colorado, car rides through the mountains in Nick's Honda Accord, Rachel riding shotgun, me third wheel in the back. She's coming from the library now, books clutched to her chest. Tries to brush me off again, but this time I won't let her. "Rachel, what happened?" It's more a statement this time than a question. She shakes her head, but I can see her breaking down, eyes gleaming in the twilight. "What happened?" She looks at me. "You really want to know?" "Yes, please, just tell me." And she does. Nick comes. I have no idea until Rachel calls and says, "He's here, he's staying in her dorm, JC out of town for the weekend." I want to scream. What the hell was she thinking, telling him? After she made me promise I wouldn't say anything, wouldn't tell anybody? "Please," she says, "I don't know what to do. He's really upset. He's going to do something stupid. Please just help." I hang up and look over at Seth, whistling at his computer, legs crossed, dangling his Birkenstock. I feel a burning in my stomach. Nick's probably already on his way up from across campus. Part of me wants to just leave, walk away, let what happened happen. Instead, I grab my jacket and Seth's shoulder. "Come on, let's go." "What the fuck, man? I'm about to beat this level." "Come on, let's go to Bucky's. I'm bored as hell." "All right, man, all right. Let me grab my coat." By the time we get back, it's late, quiet, and dark. I'm hoping we're in the clear. Nick calmed down and back in Rachel's room, passed out, or even better, already on the train back home. It's not until we're almost to the door of McLuhan that I see him walking up from the parking lot, Rachel trailing behind, crying. What the hell? Seth says. Go inside, I tell him. Who the hell is that? Go inside. He finally does, and I meet Nick on the sidewalk, his eyes wild, hair long, the first time I've seen him since summer. Rachel stands off to the side, still crying. What the fuck, man? Was that him? It's not worth it, man. Come on, let's just go. Tell that piece of shit to get back out here. I want to talk to him. Dude, it's not worth it. Let's just... He pushes past me, headed for the door, until campus security steps in front of him. Everything all right here? In an alternate universe, I see Nick taking a swing at the officer, charging past through the doors, catching Seth in the stairwell. I see the night ending in blood and tears and handcuffs, explaining to the disciplinary committee why I shouldn't be expelled. Instead, Nick looks at the officer, stares me down. Yeah, he says. Yeah, everything's all right. Okay then, move it along. And so he does, takes Rachel's pleading hand and follows her back down campus. Back in the room, Seth's on his computer again, like everything's normal. Ryan and Tom are at their desks too, a rare night with all four of us together. Perfect timing. When I walk in, Seth glances at me over his shoulder. What was that about? I look at him, the burning rising now from my stomach to my chest. You know what it was about. He stops and turns around, sighing and crossing his legs like it's this big annoyance. What? You know what it was about. Rachel told me everything. He laughs, his same usual condescending tone, though I can hear it starting to waver. What are you talking about, man? Tom and Ryan are looking now, too, and he can tell I'm serious, so he pulls me into the hall, just like that night in Kewitt. Looks me in the eye, no glaze this time, calm. Dude, what's going on? I tell him what I know. After I left that night, he shut and locked the door. They kissed. He tried to go further, push her down, but she stopped him. He kept going. She tried to stop him again, but he grabbed her by the wrists. My voice starts trembling, like hers did when she told me, outside of Kewitt. Before I can say any more, he stops me, shaking his head. Of course he would deny it. I knew he would. But something in his face makes me hesitate, something genuine or close enough that I can't tell the difference. What he says happened is the exact opposite. Rachel tried to kiss him, but he didn't want to. He knew she'd had too much to drink, the way she was swaying and tripping around the room. He tried to put her in bed, but not like that, man. He swears it wasn't like that. He just got her in bed and left. I swear, man, he says. I swear that's all that happened. He holds that look the whole time he's telling me, like he's really in shock, like he really can't believe it. I swear, man, I got her in bed and left. I swear that's all that happened. I'm not sure I believe him or her or anything, but whatever adrenaline I had before is gone, and he can see it, his confidence coming back. He pats me on the shoulder. We good? He holds out his hand, and I want to take it, laugh it all off, want to hold on to it and to everything and to punch him in the face as hard as I can. But I don't, just turn and go back into the room. Fall turns to winter, turns to cold Nebraska spring. Seth puts wool socks on under his Birkenstocks, starts wearing a beanie with a giant pom-pom around campus. He meets a girl named Heather, and they're constantly together. The library, the dining hall, in between classes, every other night in each other's dorms. Tom and Ryan convince me to go out for spring rush. When Seth finds out, he mocks us relentlessly, can't believe we're joining a fraternity, a bunch of drunks and rapists. I want to call him out for the rapist part, but don't. It's his word against Rachel's, and I want to believe her, but she refuses to talk about it anymore. Won't say anything since that night with Nick, who won't talk to me either, back home in Colorado, back lost to any form of contact. Everything Seth says, does, starts to annoy me. His voice, his whistling, his computer games, Heather on his lap screeching every time something good or bad happens. At night, I can't sleep listening to their skin smacking and pillow talk. In the mornings, they giggle out of the shower together, and Seth uses so much Axe body spray the smell jolts me awake. We get a letter under our door, next year's housing application. On it, we need to list our building, roommate preferences. Seth glances at the paper and assumes we're all good, right? For the next year, the four of us? Tom and Ryan shrug and nod. I don't say anything. I put it off for a week, two, before I finally talk to them. It's me or Seth, I say. I can't do it. Not another year of this. They agree. They don't know for sure. No one ever will. But they have a sense of what happened with Rachel that night with Nick. And the whistling and the Axe spray body down, Axe spray downs and the nightly skin slapping and shower sex are too much for them, too. Seth has to go. It has to be done. We wait until the night before the application is due to tell him the same thing I did with the first application, I realize. The whole reason this all started in the first place. What would have happened if I hadn't waited? If I'd never filled it out at all? I'd never have met Seth. I'd be out in Boston or New York or wherever. Rachel wouldn't be filling out her transfer application back to Colorado. Maybe Nick and I would still be talking. Probably not, but maybe. Maybe this all could have been avoided, but it wasn't. We sit around a table in the dining hall, our last meal together, the four of us, not that we had many. Even when we know we have to say it, we can't. Seth sits finishing the last of his hardened cheese pizza. Tom and I stare down at our plates. Finally, Ryan sets down his fork. Seth, look, we're not living with you next year. When I look up, I can see it in Seth's face. The first time I've ever seen him taken aback. No trace of attitude or condescension. He finally manages to sputter, shaking his head. You guys are fucking me, you know that? You're really, really fucking me. And it's true, we are. The school forces sophomores to live on campus, and Seth doesn't have anyone else to be roommates with. No other friends. We don't say anything. Seth stands and takes his tray, and he's gone. Something tells me I'll see Rachel and Nick again. Someday. Eventually. But the last time I see Seth, I know it. Can feel it in my stomach. I'm walking to class from the frat house, just down the street from Bucky's gas station. My two-year term in the residence hall's over. Finally over. I'm almost to campus when I see him coming the other way under the overpass. It's another cold Midwestern spring, green fighting through the frost, but not giving up yet. He's wearing his same pom-pom hat, Birkenstocks, wool socks underneath. Approaching him, I picture our room back in McLowan. Rachel's in Kewett, JC, Nick, Colorado, the East and West Coasts, the yes, maybe, and no, I don't know, coasts. Everything that was and is that could have been different, but isn't. God damn it, it isn't. I think about crossing the street, but don't. Wonder if he'll cross, but he doesn't. Wonder where he's living, if he's still with Heather, if he still plays racquetball, if he's made any new friends. As we pass, I look directly at him, if only to see if he'll look back. But he just puts his hands in his pockets and stares straight ahead, walks on like we never knew each other, like none of this ever happened.
That's it. Thanks for joining us for this installment of Know You Tell It.
Visit us on the web at knowyoutellit.com.